the court. Mr. Keltner will present argument for the petitioner. Petitioner has reserved 5 minutes for rebuttal.
Hey, please, the court, David Keltner and Tom Leatherberry for U-Haul. Your Honors, what happened to Mr. Waltrip was a horrible and life-changing event, no doubt about it. Truth of the matter, though, is this six-person county court at law verdict of $84 million, which in the year it was returned, Dun & Bradstreet said, was the fifth largest in the country, is unsound for several reasons. Two of those are very important and especially important to the jurisprudence of this state. First, courts cannot impose liability on the basis of dissimilar acts in other states, much less other countries. The court need not look much further than its own opinions in this case and the United States Supreme Court's opinion in State Farm and Philip Morris. Second, punitive damages, as we know under Morial in Chapter 41, are only appropriate in situations where there's an objective risk of harm shown, but more particular, an actual subjective risk of awareness that hiring an area field manager without mechanical experience created a severe risk of harm. But despite that, the Court of Appeals opinion, and I will show you when we get to that point, reduces that standard dramatically and bases it on a should-have-known standard, which is not appropriate.
May I ask you, Mr. Keltner, if we find that the evidence from Canada was improper, then would remand be appropriate? Do you think that would suffice?
Yes, Your Honor. I would like to say render, but remand would be the appropriate remedy on that basis. No doubt about it. Let me talk about the Canadian evidence. As you know, evidence regarding other incidents or bad acts has to at least be similar to be relevant. This court decided that issue in Nissan versus Armstrong, and more recently this summer in SCI versus Guerra. Guerra's recent. I won't go into great detail about that case, but you will recall what happened there was a situation in which a body had been moved without the family's permission and reburied in a very close plot. The issue there, though, was how similar does it have to be? At least one of the incidents had exactly the same facts, but at a different cemetery, at a different time, with different employees. And this court said that was not similar enough. Those kinds of situations have to show substantial similarity, not being identical, but substantial similarity. The Canadian evidence, which falls into really two categories, isn't close to that. It's not even close to the similarity shown in Guerra, which the court said was not enough. In the Canadian evidence, Mr. Patterson testified to two things. One, the Ontario Safety Leak, which he said he had personal knowledge of and was involved in the investigation, although he didn't explain how. It certainly wasn't leaked mechanical because he didn't have any mechanical talents at all. And second, a series of studies allegedly done by the Canadian government on 1,400 trucks, some of which may have been U-Haul, some of which may not have been, of which he had no knowledge whatsoever, was not a participant. We don't even know if he read the report.
But he testified about the 50% of those trucks had parking brake problems, was that testimony pertinent to U-Haul type trucks?
Your Honor, we don't believe so for several reasons. First off, let me be absolutely sure that we're on the same page. In the Ontario Safety Leak case, he did say 50% on the British Columbia survey, which was only part of the 1,400 trucks, not nearly all. He said 50% again. But was it a similar truck? Was it a statistical accurate kind of survey? How was it done? On what regulations, especially governmental regulations, was it done? How would you judge similarity? And my question to the court, and my question to the Dallas court as well is, how would we know? There's no indication of what that is. There's not one record about the reports either with the Ontario Safety League or with the governmental reports. Not one. We don't know what regulations were being applied. The only testimony on that came from Mr. Schoen, and it was in passing, put on by the plaintiffs in a videotape immediately before Mr. Patterson testified, and it was on dissimilar issues. Even Mr. Patterson had to testify on cross-examination that a significant number of his complaints and observations had nothing to do with the braking system on the trucks. Only three trucks out of all of these were demonstrated to have any kind of parking brake problem, and we don't even know what those are.
Counsel, did Waldrop claim that U-Haul's policies, safety policies, were defective or negligence? And if so, you could conceive of an argument that Chairman Schoen, who said we're responsible for all of it, and if the safety policies in Canada and the U.S. were the same, we may have a problem. Was that one of Waldrop's claims?
Your Honor, I would have to say when you look at the final argument and opening statement, yes, those claims were made. When you look at the evidence about a standard of care, there was no testimony to what the standard of care for maintaining a fleet of these trucks would be. That's very important.
What would they, let me just interrupt you on that same point.
That's right.
What would they have to establish to show that standard of care? I didn't get from your briefs what that would look like.
Your Honor, it could be any number of things depending on what their complaint would be. And as Justice Rainwright was suggesting is, did they make that suggestion? No, they didn't put it in evidence. But in answer to your question, here's what it could look like.
What did he need to do? What did he need to do?
I think if you were going to talk about maintenance issues, you have to say you need to look at the transmission fluid every X days or periods of time. No standard of care testimony on that. You would have to do certain kinds of checks on the truck at certain periods of time. No testimony about that. The only thing they have is our internal policies, which again, as we have suggested to you and this court has held in FFE versus Fulgham, isn't going to be enough to establish a standard of care. The only standard of care they got close on in candor comes from their expert Reed, who says once that you determine that there could be grease or some kind of invading liquid on the brake pads on the parking brake, then you had to go ahead and replace the entire brake. It's important on the negligence standard of care for the jury to have something to judge the conduct against. Otherwise, you are going to have a situation where you don't really have any guidance to the jury. This is not, I mean, one of the issues that I look at, you say, well, surely a layman has some idea about changing oil, doing things like that. True. But this is a fleet of 96,000 trucks. These trucks, by Mr. Reed's testimony, by the cross-examination of our witnesses, aren't my mother's Buick. The parking brake works in different ways. In a passenger car, it works with going to the actual brake system on the wheels. Here, it doesn't work that way. As Mr. Reed testified, it's a completely different system, and it's enclosed in all types of situations. The maintenance of a fleet is extremely important, but it's beyond the expertise, I think, of laymen.
It's so different and so complicated. Would one need mechanical experience to manage that fleet, given how complex these brakes are, et cetera?
Yes, Your Honor, we believe they would. And FFE versus Fulgham is this court's really dealing with that issue. In that case, remember what happened is there was a tractor trailer issue. FFE maintained the trailer and the trailer came off and flipped the rig. And the issue was, and this is what the plaintiffs argued, they said, look, we can tell that there are bolts that are loose. There are bolts that aren't attached. There are rusted bolts and the like. And that's within a layman's knowledge. You don't need a standard of care on that. This court said no. Yes, you do, because even if you could see that those were loose or some were missing or they were rusted, you didn't know the tolerance of when it became unsafe. The San Antonio Court of Appeals recently, this summer in Polito, reached the same issue based on FFE. Now, that case may be headed to this court, but the truth of the matter is standardless stuff seldom works. The Canadian evidence, I want to return to that very briefly, is extremely important to this case because it was the turning point, we believe, in the case. And we believe there is great harm. In looking at harm, this court's recent opinion in Coastal versus Garza is as bad as good as it gets, and I'm going to do some comparison between the two cases, although that was a call to racial prejudice or racial hatred in one respect. The real issue was this. In Coastal versus Guerra, you recall there was an issue that was distasteful to Hispanics, and it was published to the jury. It only got into the jury four times. This evidence came in many more times than that. It was introduced in evidence through Mr. Shane, through Lynn Buck, our person, and through others as well. As additionally, you heard there was testimony from Mr. Patterson and the Ontario Safety League. The issue, though, was extremely important here. Remember what the jury did. This is an award of $84 million. $42 million of that was punitive damages. A significant amount. $42 million against UHI, $21 million against U-Haul of Texas for a total of $63. Just like in Coastal versus Garza, one other thing happened. The jury gave greater amounts to the plaintiff than actually the plaintiff asked for. Give you an example. UHI, in final argument, they asked them to put 39% negligence on UHI. The jury put 39%. This issue had a huge impact. In final argument, one of the first statements made was, this is a continental problem. Well, other than the United States, other than Texas, what made it continental? The Canadian evidence. Next issue was they talked about systemic problems. Why was it systemic? The only person who testified about systemic was Mr. Patterson on the Canadian Safety League.
Going back to Justice Guzman's question a moment, maybe I misunderstood the burden of it, but I took the burden of it to be if a lay jury can't tell without expert help what proper maintenance of these trucks, how could crews? That's what I took the burden of the question to be.
Your Honor, I don't know that the issue, I think, is whether the standards adopted were deficient. There's no standard of care on that. The other issue is, that it is true, it's a good issue. Could crews know what the maintenance issues were? But that was not his decision. He was given a job to do, and the job of an
The Court of Appeals affirmance of the punitive damages turns heavily on whether he should have had more expertise.
Yes, sir, it does. And let me also, it exactly does. And the issue is basically what the court holds, and it's a surprising holding in one respect, and I'm going to do something I normally don't do. I'm going to directly quote it to you because I think it is terribly important to what we are doing here. The court says the jury's affirmative, this is question nine, and it says the jury's answer to question nine is supported by Buck's testimony. And this is the one sentence that supports the gross negligence finding. Buck hired a person with no mechanical experience and who she believed needed no mechanical experience to be directly responsible for tracking the transmission fluid. Now, Your Honor, in answer to your question, is that an issue upon which, first off, there was no standard of care issue on that, but think about what this does in punitive damages.
It allows
liability for should have known rather than actual subjective awareness in violation of Morial in Chapter 41. As a result, it is terribly problematic. Now, the issue is, did you need an AFM to do these tasks? The answer is no under the evidence for two reasons. First off, it wasn't a mechanical check. It was a check around the truck for various things to find out whether a mechanic needed to follow up and do other checks. Remember what he did. Put the truck in second gear and operated it with the parking brake on to see if it rolled. If it did, a mechanic looked at it. So a mechanic followed up and did those various things. The only other thing they say is what we call the parlor trick of demonstrating that you couldn't check the transmission fluid in a standard transmission truck. You couldn't check it without putting it on a rack or getting underneath it, none of which was required by the AFM safety certification. And that was that issue. Your Honor, my time is up unless there are questions.
Here's our none. Thank you, counsel.
Thank you,
sir. Court is now ready to hear argument from the respondents.
May it please the court, Mr. Lyon will present argument for the respondents.
First of all, it's an honor and a privilege for me to be here with you today. I'm proud to represent my client, and I'm proud to be before this court. I want to explain quickly why it's so important for them to check the parking brake in the transmission, because that's something that's very important. The transmission is located to the right of the driver. The parking brake handle is here to the left. You simply pull it up to check it. If you have a standard transmission truck, it's not any different than a standard transmission pickup or standard transmission car. It has five gears. The transmission began to leak in 2003 when they put the seal in there, according to the testimony. It leaked for several years. When that transmission starts leaking, the brake drum is immediately behind it on the drive shaft that goes back to the rear wheels.
So that's different from automobiles, where, isn't it, where the parking brake and the brake while you're operating the vehicle use the same parts to operate?
Correct. But it's not different.
So this is different.
The operation is the same.
Okay.
And when you have a brake drum and a brake shoe, and you pull it up, and you get that oil on there, it's in every manual and every expert has testified, that begins to deteriorate the shoe. Those shoes go together on the brake drum, and they're made out of a ceramic material. And when that oil gets on there, that deteriorates, and then it becomes bare metal, which is every expert admitted, and we brought it in the courtroom. That system was worthless. So it would be the same thing as if you rented a car from Hertz, you got in it, you put it into park, and it wasn't in park. This transmission was so chewed up because of lack of transmission fluid because it leaked, and they'd put transmission fluid in it. It had leaked over a period of years, that it was a false gear. So that when Mr. Waldrop, who and five other people drove this thing and had truck, the parking brake didn't work for them before they rented it out. That's why
I have one question on that though. How did you establish the standard of care though for that ordinary negligence claim, which is what you're alluding to when you talk about the fluid? What did you do to establish that?
Well, let's talk about that. First, we asked Joe Schoen. Now, when you have a brake that's not operative, talking about one of these trucks, that's our fault. Who is our? He admitted to it above. Who are you speaking of? Everybody involved in the U-Haul system. So it would be everybody from myself down through, and including the people at the actual location.
But how many times are you supposed to check the brakes? Who's supposed to check it? What's their training supposed to be? What are the protocols? How did you establish what the standard of care should
have been? Well, in their own documents, they have, according to James Gwynn, who was a manager at U-Haul Texas, safety inspection on the transmission and the parking brake must be done every 30 days. He also said it's failure to inspect breaks the U-Haul rules, and they don't know that the truck is safe. It doesn't take a rocket scientist to know.
But opposing counsel says your rules and regulations and procedures don't set the industry standard. Is it your position that they do?
I disagree with him. Common sense tells you that you don't want to rent a car or a truck to people that doesn't have a parking brake.
But they
and doesn't
I don't
have
think
a,
anyone's saying that that's the case because they clearly they want to inspect their trucks and vehicles. The question, though, is
okay.
Is it your position that their internal policies are the industry standard, established
well,
evidence of the industry standard?
My position is that if you say that we have to have an expert to say that, they do. And in addition to that, the Department of Transportation rules and regulations for commercial trucks say that you have to have a DOT certified mechanic, which they never had, certify this truck to be safe every year. And be safe means check the parking brake and check, make sure the transmission is not leaking.
And petitioner says those regulations don't apply to them.
Well, they still are evidence of the fact that you have to do that.
Do you
that
agree
you should
with
do
that?
That?
Do you agree with their contention?
No. Their own witnesses admitted those regulations applied. Our experts, without objection, testified that those regulations apply. Dr. Marshak testified to that, and Randy Reed, our mechanic, who had been a rider service center inspector for 5 years. So that's not all. There, we counted 85 references in the record to standard of care. Mr. Reed testified that inspections, including DOT and safety inspection. He also testified that grease should never be permitted under the standard of care to a brake shoe. He said that he had never seen a fleet parking brake in this condition. Their own experts, Dr. Marshak said, who was our expert mechanical engineer, said that mileage versus time-based inspections, they have different inspections for these trucks, but you have to inspect these trucks on a regular basis. They're renting these trucks out to every Tom, Dick, and Harry that comes in there that's 18 years of age or older with a driver's license. This truck was determined by many witnesses, one of whom from Forney High School said, as he was taking the truck to Tyler for a football game where they had all the band stuff in the back, he said the kids named it the Titanic. This truck was horribly. Underneath it, and there are pictures in the record to show this, it was covered in grease. It was covered in grease. Their minimum standard, which they admitted to, is every 30 days they're supposed to check that, those two things, along with several other things. Every 30 days.
Counsel, I believe his petitioner's brief says that an examination of the transmission of the truck only showed that the teeth on the reverse gear was damaged. The teeth on first gears, the other gears, was not damaged.
That's their expert that said that. Our experts differed, and the jury's entitled to believe which our experts differed. Our experts said that the teeth in the first gear were damaged. And the fact is, when you put it into first gear, it wouldn't, it was a false gear. It was a trap for the driver. You see, when you put it into first gear, it really wasn't in first gear. So that shows that first gear was messed up. And our people took it apart, and they disagreed with it.
So respond to the argument about the Canadian evidence.
I'd love to. One of the things that I think is important in business is honesty, and it's important in the courtroom. There's a book called The Millionaire Mind. And I bought that book for my two sons after I read it, gave it to them for a Christmas present several years ago. They surveyed several millionaires, hundreds of them. The number one attribute for business people to be successful wasn't education, it wasn't training, it was honesty. 78% of them attributed that. Mr. Schoen was not honest in any way, shape, form, or fashion. And let me say why that is important. Before Mr. Waldrop was injured, the Ontario Safety League, which is a very respected organization, has been in existence over 100 years in Ontario and was started because horseback buggies were running over people. And that's why they started. And they did a study of 30 of U-Haul trucks, rental trucks. This is not a products liability case, Justice Wainwright. It is a case involving notice to Joe Schoen, who was the CEO of this organization, who controlled 51% of the stock of a $1 billion company. So Mr. Schoen, they found 30 of these trucks. They tested them. Half of them, the brakes didn't work. Three of those 30 had parking brakes that didn't work.
Did there have to be evidence about how those trucks were selected or whether they were the same model? I mean, U-Haul rents so many different types of trucks.
This doesn't go to this kind of truck. This goes to the maintenance of their trucks in general. Then, because of the furor that was caused by this, the Toronto Star did an expose on. Toronto Star is the biggest newspaper in Canada. It's roughly the equivalent in publication of the Dallas Morning News. The Toronto Star did an expose. This is all more than a year before Mr. Waldrop was injured by this mechanical device that was by this truck. Then the police got involved. The British Columbia police did a study of 700 or so of these trucks, and the Ontario State Police did a study. They found 50% of them in these studies, 50% were shut down because of maintenance. Now, Mr. Schoen, in his testimony, said, that's not relevant. That's not important. Because they were just looking at stickers and things of that nature and frayed tires. He lied about that. It's not, you can't just because you're the CEO of a corporation.
Is there, what evidence is there that there was more than just what he said?
Evidence from Mr. Patterson, who was involved in those investigations.
And?
The jury could believe either one of them.
Okay, so we just compare Mr. Patterson's evidence and that will support, that would be contrasted and...
Well, you're entitled to impeach a witness when he gets up and says something that's not true.
Sure. You're relying on Mr. Patterson's testimony.
Part of it, yes.
What else?
I'm also relying on Mr. Schoen.
You say Mr. Schoen was incredible, and what else besides Mr. Patterson's testimony would you be relying on?
Well, Mr. Schoen testified twice. He testified first by deposition where he said this study was nothing. He also said, and it's relevant, that our safety record is 10 out of 10. The defendant's attorney got up in opening argument and said, our safety policies are excellent. Our safety policies are the best in the industry. That's an opening statement. So what we showed, now, then Mr. Waldrop is injured over a year later. Mr. Schoen is interviewed, and then the Los Angeles Times does a big front page story on U-Haul's maintenance practices. And they detail a lot of people that are killed or injured as a result of faulty maintenance. We didn't bring any of those people in because I was very afraid of that being reversible error. But Mr. Schoen is interviewed by a radio station. And in regard to this truck, this case with Mr. Waldrop, after Mr. Waldrop has already been injured, he says on the radio, if we rented a truck with a bad parking brake and it's hurt somebody, it'd be our fault and we'd pay a lot of money. Then they get up in trial and say, it's not our fault. So we're entitled to bring this Canadian evidence in. And we did. And we're entitled to cross-examine him about the fact that he went to Canada and was interviewed on a TV station there that is the equivalent of 60 Minutes called W5. And he tried to deny there that they had problems with their safety record. So this man is all over the book in terms of what he testified to, and we're entitled to not just take his testimony, we're entitled to impeach him on it and show that he had noticed for 1 year or more that they had problems with their safety, with their maintenance of their trucks, And it's all their trucks. This isn't like Nissan where you have all these complaints trying to prove a product liability defect. We show that there was notice of a systematic problem within their system that resulted in very poor maintenance.
So Mr. Lyon, you're contending that the Canadian evidence was admissible to impeach Mr. Schoen.
Absolutely.
And you also claim it was admissible to show that there was systematic braking problems with U-Haul trucks, whether they were in Canada or in Texas.
That's right. And this truck was in Canada, Justice Wainwright. It spent a lot of time up there. All their trucks go into Canada. You were going to ask me a question.
I was. My question is, for the Canadian evidence to be admissible on the second point, do you still have to satisfy the Nissan versus Armstrong similarity requirements? And how did the evidence do that?
Very simple. You have a fleet of trucks, and they have 4,500 of these jumbo haulers. That's what they call them. Then they have another bunch of trucks. They are the gatekeeper. U-Haul International keeps the records on these trucks. This truck was actually put into the down equipment tracker, which is supposed to never be rented, nearly a year before, and they continued to rent it, They were in charge of that. When you have a maintenance program on your trucks, and they have the same all the policies, they don't say you're going to do this on a U-Haul jumbo truck. You're going to do this on all their trucks. You're going to do this certain amount of checking every 30 days or every 90 days if they're a long haul truck. So the issue is maintenance. It isn't a products liability case. Did they do proper maintenance? And they didn't. And the Canadian government, who does actually do safety inspections, made them sell over 100 trucks up there, according to the testimony.
But the concern, though, and I'm sure you understand this, because it could be used against either side in a trial, is showing that something bad happened in one country proves that something bad happened in this instant in this state.
Okay.
Have the Nissan requirements, right?
I don't agree with that. I think, first of all, they just drive up there. They don't have to ship them across the continent. We have the North American Free Trade Agreement, free shipment of goods and services all the way through North America. What we get here is this, Justice. When you maintain a fleet of trucks and you do it all the same, then your poor maintenance in one area is relevant to the poor maintenance in the other areas. It's very simple. They have the same policies throughout. They are controlled by U-Haul International. As the testimony shows, they control everything. But that's why we believed this court ought to reinstate the punitive damages against U-Haul International, because they have a system and they don't adhere to that system, and it results in people's lives being destroyed. Now, let me say what they don't dispute. They don't dispute that the parking brake didn't work because the transmission was leaking oil on the brake shoes. That's not disputed. They don't dispute that the bad transmission and bad parking brake caused Mr. Waldrop's catastrophic injuries. They don't challenge the award of $21 million in actual damages, because this man is horribly, horribly injured, and it's been horrible for his family. His mind is as sharp as any of ours in this room, and he was in excellent shape. They don't dispute that for over a year before the truck was taken off the road, because the parking brake did not work 1 year before, they put it back into service. U-Haul International was in charge of that through their computer system. They never notified anybody else about the fact that this truck should have been taken out.
They argued that problem with the brake was a faulty warning light, not a determination that the brake was inoperable.
Well, that's...
Is there contrary evidence in the record?
Absolutely. Mr. Rivalis, who drove the truck from Florida to Texas in front of a hurricane. He rented it in Florida right after they did this repair, where they repaired the light, not the brake. He told the U-Haul subsidiary there in Florida that the parking brake didn't work. It rolled on him that night. This is in October of 2005, almost a year before Mr. Waldrop was injured. He told them. He then called the U-Haul hotline, and his testimony is that he reported the parking brake. U-Haul International controls the hotline. So he told them there. And then when he got to U-Haul, Texas on Ferguson Road in Dallas, Texas, he went in with his friend and reported the parking brake doesn't work and the transmission doesn't work. After that, October. The next few months, that truck was safety certified supposedly by Mr. Cruz, who was the fellow that was grossly incompetent. In the courtroom, he's hired by U-Haul Texas. He testified that there's no way to check a standard transmission. And I know that anybody that's ever had any dealings at all with a vehicle will know that you can check the standard transmission by sticking your little finger in a hole in the transmission. So it's absolutely clear that truck's brakes didn't work. There were five people from when it got to U-Haul, Texas, and then went out to the Jot 'em Down store in Forney. Five people drove that truck. They didn't get it in gear because it had a false gear. Five of them, and the truck rolled on them. One man had his little kids with him. Thank God they didn't get run over. So they don't deny that they failed to check and detect the transmission leak. They don't deny that they had a duty to rent this truck with a parking brake that worked. They don't dispute that the standard of care precludes renting a truck in this horrible condition. And I want to say a couple of things.
Mr. Lyons, can you conclude briefly? Your time has expired.
Oh, is my time up?
Yes, sir.
Show's on here. I got a minute and 45 seconds. I'm sorry. I kept seeing it go, and I'm going.
Red light.
Man, I thought I was back through. Well, excuse me. Thank you very much. It's an honor to be here for before you. And I honor you for your public service and sacrifice. Thank you,
counsel. The court will hear rebuttal.
The court, Mr. Leatherberry, will present the rebuttal for the petitioners.
May it please the court, Tom Leatherberry for the petitioners. The court has heard about the plaintiff's view of the evidence, and the court has heard about the plaintiff's theories, which we submit to the court, are not supported by the evidence or are supported merely by multiple impermissible stacked inferences.
Can I ask you, what is your response to their argument about the Canadian evidence? What's your response to that?
Absolutely. Justice Lehrman, the more you hear about the Canadian evidence, the more I think the court will find it difficult to believe or to find that the trial court made the determinations of sufficient similarity that it has to do under Nissan and under GARA or SCI. It is vague hearsay testimony. It is standardless testimony. It is impossible to know really what is going on with the Canadian evidence testimony. So
it wasn't properly objected to testimony?
Yes, Your Honor. It certainly was. That's at volume 5, pages 125 to 131. There were extensive arguments about the Canadian evidence. We stated the basis for our complaints, lack of similarity, it happened in another country, it was prejudicial, Rule 403. All of those things were made at that point. In addition, throughout the testimony, there were additional hearsay and relevance objections made.
I'm trying to imagine a second trial without the Canadian evidence, and there's evidence that this truck was reported in 2005, and it was disputed that there was repairs made after that report, and then again in 2005 with several reports in Florida and back in Texas, and then after July of 2006, three or four more reports on this truck that was reported not just to the local U-Haul, but to U-Haul International. So if there's a second trial without the Canadian evidence, how is the outcome going to be any different?
Your Honor, I think if the court picks that apart, the first thing the court has to consider is on the negligence claim, what is the evidence of the standard of care? And we thought about it quite a bit. Okay, what are the questions that an expert could properly and should have properly testified to in this case about the standard of care? Okay, was a safety certification inspection required? Who is qualified to perform a safety certification, which is a minor field check? It is a voluntary policy. It is not required by anything in any regulations. It is totally voluntary. So who's qualified? Do they need prior mechanical experience to do the functional brake test, which was a key point of the safety certification, where you put the gear in, you put it in second gear and let off the clutch with the engine going to see if the brake holds? How often should those safety certifications be done? This whole dispute about 30-60-90 involves in different interpretations of U-Haul's voluntary policies. There is no testimony about industry standard of care. In fact, Mr. Schoen testified that our voluntary policies were better than the industry standard of care.
But apparently the results weren't any better.
And it's a tragic accident, Your Honor. That's absolutely true.
That's what's paramount here. I mean, are there different standards that this company has in Canada and the United States and Mexico? Or are they all the same standards?
U-Haul International sets the policies. And those policies are followed by the local marketing companies, U-Haul Canada in Canada, U-Haul Texas in Texas. But there are even more questions about standard of care that have to be answered here. Justice Medina's point gets to the harmful and prejudicial impact of the Canadian evidence, because what you have is Patterson testifying based on these government investigations that he did not observe, that he did not have personal knowledge of, that there was a systemic fail, and on the Ontario Safety League inspections, that there was a systemic failure of policy in U-Haul Canada. They want the jury to infer that Patterson's testimony means there is actual evidence that those policies were not followed, when Patterson was not a mechanic, he was not an expert, he was a lay witness, and there was no testimony about how any of these trucks got in the condition they got. There were no documents, that sort of thing. So, and then, on top of that inference, they want the jury to infer that there was a failure to follow policies in U-Haul, Texas. We've addressed the downed equipment tracker. The downed equipment tracker, which was the record that U-Haul International maintained based on entries by the local marketing company, showed, that's Plaintiff's Exhibit 114 at page 3, that it was fixed, it was repaired, and it was cleared to be rented. That's what U-Haul International knew. And it had a PM5 after that, it was safety certified 4 times after that, one by a man who was not Mr. Cruz, who was not criticized at all at trial. So there are responses, we've covered those in our brief, to each of these notice points. And then you layer on top of that our arguments about the standard of care, and we respectfully ask the court to render or to remand on those points that aren't rendered.
Justice Wayne?
Counsel, you, in response to Justice Willett's question, said that U-Haul and the other defendants properly made an objection to the Canada evidence. Was that the individual objections, or was it a running objection?
It was a running objection, Your Honor. That's discussed at footnote 5 of the Court of Appeals opinion. The Court of Appeals found that with the consent of plaintiff's counsel, a running objection was obtained to Mr. Patterson's testimony on the grounds that had been stated, and it was not necessary to inject those individual objections to individual questions. Counsel did object additionally to certain individual questions, But a running objection was the foundation for that.
Any further questions? Thank you, Mr. Leatherberry. The cause is submitted, and the court will take a brief recess.
All rise.